This meeting is now being recorded.
Shalom, everyone. This is Elliot Salo Schellenberg speaking, the International Director of Placement for the Rabbinical Assembly. Welcome to Mocha Mondays, Meditations on Career Advancement, a series that we've now been doing for about 2 years, podcasts and phone seminars for background information about best practices in the search process for congregations and institutions. Our topic today is a good decision-making process. And our presenter is Mr. Rich Michelson of Fairlawn, New Jersey, who had the privilege of being the chair of not one search committee, but two search committees for both an interim rabbi and for a senior rabbi in Fairlawn, New Jersey. Welcome, Rich.
Thank you, Rabbi.
So let's get right to it, and let's talk a little bit about the design. Who designed your process for making the decision? The search committee, the board, the congregation, and could you talk a little bit about the relationship between the various constituents?
Well, I think the search committee, to some extent, designed the process because we were chartered with the responsibility for figuring out how to go about this rather significant and fortunately new task for our congregation. And so as we learned more about the process, I think we really did a lot to try to figure out how it should proceed. And along the way of doing that, one of the things that quickly became evident to us was that the relationship between the search committee and both the board and the full congregation was going to be absolutely critical to the success of the process. And one of the sort of most important messages that I could share with this group and that that we discussed amongst our search committee is the fact that the search committee is really intended to be a reflection of the full congregation, not even just the board. The relationship with that congregation, the manner in which we engage the congregation, we communicate with the congregation, was really important, both in order to get to a result we were proud of, but also to get to a result that I think worked for the congregation.
So let's talk a little bit about how you decided on that process. And I'm also interested about when you communicated that, when you designed the process and it was agreed upon, communicated it to the congregation. Did they know about it in advance? Were they informed? How did they find out about it? Did you get responses to that?
Well, once we did sort of some of our initial exploration into what we'd gotten ourselves involved with, which included, certainly reading the book that you've put out on this, you know, was in fact something that we was assigned reading for every member of our search committee. And in fact, they did all read it. And it was, you know, I think really important in helping us to form some of our views. But early in that process, what we did was begin communicating with the full, obviously with the board at our monthly board meetings, but with the full congregation by using the bulletin as a manner to send a letter to the congregation from the search committee, explaining to them what it was we were going to do. And because the very first step of that process was to solicit the input from the congregation as to what was important to them today and for the future, that involved opening up the discussion to the whole congregation. We used focus groups as the central way to do that. So we were actively inviting people to participate in the search process. Now, you could call it come attend a focus group, but we really tried to refer to it as engaging anyone in the congregation who was interested in being part of the search process by participating in focus groups and thereby sharing with the search committee their views on what the objectives for the temple and the priorities for the temple were.
So one of the things you're doing is you're articulating in your language that their participation counted towards the decision. So you actually use that kind of language.
Very much so. Very much so. And in fact, very early in the process of the search committee, I will share with you that we had a rather large search committee, about 20 participants, and that was perhaps the first decision process of the process, which was trying to build a search committee that represented cross sections of the whole congregation. And I think it was very important for perception, as well as pragmatically, that we not just have, you know, what's thought as, well, the old timers or the, you know, established leadership of the temple be making such a decision, but to get people that were young, old, involved, not involved in weekly services or ritual, involved in the social aspects of the shul, not involved in the social aspects of the shul, to all be represented on the search committee. And once we put the search committee together, one of the rules we had and speeches that was given with some frequency was to insist that no member of the search committee was entitled to a personal vote, that all 20 members of the search committee were simply here as representatives of the congregation, and that that put a responsibility on them to know what the congregation was looking for and to conduct themselves in the process as representing the full congregation. And I think that to a great extent, I think, infused the thought process, the whole decision process.
It's kind of one of your underlying principles.
Yes.
I have a real specific kind of question. Did your committee ever vote? If you needed to make a decision about some aspect, this candidate is in, this candidate is out, this one we'll invite for Shabbat, this one we won't vote, won't come for Shabbat. Did you make a decision? Do you vote? Was a majority sufficient? Did you need a supermajority? Was it a consensus? What was the actual mechanism in place as you made different decisions?
We on the one hand, I'd have to answer the question both ways. We voted, but I think nobody ever, and certainly I didn't look at the vote as being sort of a democratic thing, but more a process by which we could flesh out what the issues were if people were of a divergent view on any point. And you're right. It's important for us to take a moment to talk about the narrowing process from the very beginning, getting resumes in, to the very end where you're down to the last few candidates. But our goal was to use these votes as a forum to say, why is your vote this way and your vote is that way? And let's have the discussion in order to make sure we're all on the same page about sort of perceptions. We should at least share the perceptions that are behind those votes. And in the end, the goal was to generally reach, I'd call it supermajority. We never wanted to proceed with something that was sort of a 51% vote if at the end of the discussion we didn't have the substantial majority of the committee feeling that was the right step to take. Then we talked about it more.
If there was a controversy about something, a disagreement about some aspect of it, how was that resolved?
Well, there were great controversies and disagreements about quite a few aspects. But if you step back and think about what those sorts of disagreements would be, they're always related to either a fact pattern of the candidate or a personality of the candidate. And in both of those situations, if there's a real difference of opinion, then you probably need to get a little bit more insight. And so that may mean checking, because one person thinks the fact is yes, the other thinks the fact is no. And so you can check that fact and find out, was it yes or no, and come back and make the decision when you have that answer. And it may be what I'll call personality related, in which case you may want to explore that aspect. Now, you may want to explore it either by another phone discussion with the candidate. You may want to discuss it, explore it with some additional references regarding that candidate in order to try to get more insight into the individual. I think that the only thing that's probably obvious to everyone in this phone call is that you're going into a really interesting process that will not have easy answers or clear right or wrong answers. And that the more insight that you're able to get, particularly when it's a tough issue, such as something that may be controversial amongst the different members of the search committee, the more insights you can get, the more you can vector in on that point and get two more references, maybe someone from a congregation, two congregations ago from that candidate, the better off that you'll be. But the goal really was to try to come to, you could say consensus, a supermajority or something like that.
Great. So let's actually talk about the decision. How did you know you had the right rabbi? When did you know, and how did you know?
It's a really wonderful question. The answer is we knew we had the right rabbi 6 months after he'd been hired, which really brings me to the process, which is what this call is about. And I would suggest that anybody who really thinks they have the right rabbi is a far wiser man or woman than I am. Instead, we approached it as a narrowing process. So, I'm sorry? We were blessed to have many candidates send us resumes. And we went through what I'll call formally, we went through three rounds of trying to discern which were the right candidates. And the proper phrase I probably should have just used is trying to discern which were the wrong candidates for us. And I'm sure with this group, I don't need to spend a lot of time talking about, you know, the mantra of Rabbi Schoenberg, which is the objective is not to find the best rabbi. The objective is to find the best rabbi for your congregation. If anybody doesn't understand that concept, deal with that now or you can't succeed. When you approach it that way and you're starting to figure out what is it that's important for my congregation, and that's really what we came out of these focus groups in. Every search committee meeting began by every search committee member recounting the feedback they'd gotten from members since the last meeting, maybe at a kiddush, maybe at a phone call, you know, maybe attributed to a person, but somebody's saying this, somebody's saying that. So we were always trying, the holy grail for us wasn't finding the right candidate, it was figuring out what we wanted. And as we did that, we were able to say clearly our priorities are A, B, C, and D in that order. And so if somebody was lacking in A and B, it was pretty quick to be able to knock them out of the running. And in the first round of the process was one in which I, as the search chair, called each of the 28 candidates who were nice enough to send a resume to us and had just a brief introductory phone call with them. But I got a little sense, you know, of who they were, and I sort of reported back to the search committee. There were several that clearly were not for us, and I would explain why. And we agreed that, I don't remember the exact numbers, but say 20 of those were candidates that we should learn more about. And then we formed three committees, subcommittees, and split the list up, and each subcommittee called and had a longer and very structured interview with each one. And by structured, I mean they all ask the same questions, basically in the same order, so that when they reported back to the committee, we would all be talking about the same things. And again, it's a lot easier to do when you figured out what's important to your congregation. So again, we did that narrowing process and said, of our highest priorities, you know, this candidate is really not strong in two or three of them, and they fell out. And so each step along the way, we narrowed the process until we ultimately invited three candidates. And in fact, there were only, in my particular temple's case, there were only two candidates that everybody was really in agreement on should be invited. And we couldn't quite decide who the third was. And to some extent, I think my committee humored me that I had just really liked this other candidate and said, let's at least, you know, spend some time with him and get to know him. And we did that narrowing process straight through that. And in the end, it was a very tough decision between two candidates, and I think it was not evident that one was going to be right and one was going to be wrong. But what was evident was that each had different strengths and potentially weaknesses. As much as we learned about each one, which is less than a complete knowledge, of course, and we weighed the strengths of each candidate against the prioritization of what was important to our congregation and made our selection based on that.
Right, so that's a great way to set up the process, which is the more you know about what it is that you want, in fact, the clearer and easier it is to make a final decision.
I think if this entire call did nothing other than that sentence, it would be valuable.
All right, so let's take a pause here, Rich, and invite any of those who are on the line, if they had a question about anything you already have covered or something we've yet to cover. So I invite any of our participants to ask a question who are on the line with us.
I have a question.
Please.
Faye Goldman calling from Ottawa. I came a little late, so I'm not sure if you addressed this question earlier, but we're about to make a decision between two strong candidates. And I'm wondering if you looked for unanimity or consensus, and what were the majority rule? How did you make that decision?
We did speak about that a little bit earlier, and I'd sort of tell you that our goal for any disagreements that we had between the members was to use that question, we'll say, of what they were voting on to flesh out why their view was A instead of B, and then that became the point of discussion, not whether they liked candidate A versus B, but why they liked candidate A versus B. And then people could chime in on two things. One, does everybody agree with the perception related to what it is that person is saying they really like about candidate A? And the other thing is, do we agree that that issue that they like about candidate A is really the most important issue to this congregation? And so I would encourage you to use votes not as a way to find the candidate, but as a way to flesh out the discussion amongst the search committee, either to get you know, perhaps the answers reside within the search committee, or perhaps they become the basis upon which you, the search committee, need to go out and do a little more investigation on a candidate. Maybe get another reference, you know, maybe check back with the candidate to ask a few more questions. And flesh out the issues that people are disagreeing on.
So ultimately it became clear as to who was the candidate based on those discussions then?
Yes, it did.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
In the end, we chose never to vote. We chose to talk our little hearts out until we had consensus. It was not a short meeting.
Uh-huh.
But in the end, we thought consensus was important for the search committee to make a recommendation to the board. We thought consensus was more important for the search committee to be on the same page for why we were recommending candidate A versus candidate B.
Okay. Thanks. That's very helpful.
Okay. Other questions? Okay, Rich, I have another couple set of questions here. Tell me if what biases came out or what stereotypes came out when people voiced objections to a candidate from feedback, I mean, not necessarily from the search committee, but feedback, and the statement was one that did not fit into the set of principles that you established about the right fit, but more spoke about the someone's personal bias or some misunderstanding or stereotype. How did the search committee respond to that, or even if it discovered it within inside the search committee?
Well, I think the holy grail for the search committee, which was enunciated at the beginning, and we tried and we raised it through and through, which is what are the priorities for the congregation. And I think in my particular congregation's case, certainly the best example to use to your question is the fact that my congregation is a traditional, non-egalitarian congregation. And there's no question that certain of our search committee members, just like certain of our temple members, would prefer that the congregation was egalitarian and not non-egalitarian. That is sort of the perfect example of why the search committee was tasked with the responsibility to represent the congregation as a whole. And we simply did not allow search committee members to say, you know, I want this rabbi because, you know, he's going to take us to an egal place. Because that was not the congregation's priorities. So again, the message that we tried to live with was that we were not 20 people representing ourselves. We were 20 people representing the congregation. We needed to get to know what that congregation wanted and then use that as the filter to assess whether these were the right candidates. There are conflicts within our congregation, but the search committee never saw its job as resolving those conflicts. It saw its job as accepting what the congregation, majority of the congregation, wanted and finding a candidate that would fit well within that.
Talk a little bit about the mix of head and hearts. How much of making the decision for your search committee and your congregation was a cognitive process, an intellectual process, a fact-checking process, detail or oriented, and how much was in the heart? How much was value-based? How much was based on a gut intuitive feeling that this was the right rabbi?
Well, I think that's a great question and one which all of us going through this process will grapple with. I would like to tell you that the process, and I will tell you that the process was structured to be a cognitive, intellectual, disciplined process. Our goal was not to feel good. Our goal was to be able to enunciate to anyone who asked why this candidate was recommended and chosen. And in order to do that, that's a cognitive thing. These were the criteria that we were looking for. These we saw as his strengths. They had obviously, they being the congregation, had obviously met three candidates. And so we had to be able to say these were our priorities, and this is why this candidate we felt was better suited to our priorities than the other two candidates. That said, I will tell you that one of the priorities of our congregation was to find a candidate who would light the fire under our membership in terms of excitement. And, you know, Rabbi, every congregation has its has its history, has its baggage, whatever, but we'd had a congregation that had a lot more, shall we say, discipline than enthusiasm and structure than excitement, and the congregation was really, the search committee had really identified that we were looking for a ritual leader who would buzz the place up a little bit. And so, to an extent, you can't and don't really want to eliminate the emotional component to your decision process, but I would suggest that you should try to dismiss it, knowing that you can't. If you don't try to dismiss it, you only have an emotional response. An emotional response isn't fair to your congregation because it is not, only a person can have an emotion, and a search committee member represents a congregation, not a person. So in the end, we actually did have the two candidates we were deciding between. What I will sort of admit to is that we think that one of them was a much riskier bet. He would either be much better or much worse than the other. We really weren't sure. But because this idea that we wanted to sort of get more passion into the ritual leadership, that emotional sort of component did enter into our decision-making process.
Great. So let's just pause here for a moment before I ask a final question or two, if anyone has thought of a question that they wanted to ask our presenter, Mr. Michelson. Anyone have a question out there?
I have a question. After your candidates came for their visits, did you do any kind of survey or questionnaire that feedback from the membership directly?
Yes, we did. Well, we actually did two things. As part of the process of engaging the membership and showing up, because you'll hold 2, 3, 4 events over the weekend that the candidate comes. One thing we did was a Q&A session after the Kiddush. We went back into the sanctuary, and we did a Q&A. And what we did with the membership was tell them we're going to do this, and so please send us your questions. And that allowed us to have the same questions to ask all three candidates. And at the same time, we said to them, here's going to be the process. We're going to invite a candidate for the weekend. We'll have a Friday night service. We'll have the Saturday morning service. We'll have the Q&A. And then we'll do a Sunday morning adult education lecture. Would you please, A, show up, B, let us know what questions you'd like us to ask during the Q&A so that your question can be represented, and C, give us your feedback. And we actually gave them a form for feedback, but we basically said you can fill out this form, you can send us an email to searchcommittee@ourtemple.com or, whatever it was, and we actively solicited feedback. And like we'd done during the focus group session, we also began the search committee meeting after each candidate with every committee member relaying any verbal feedback that they'd gotten. So in that way, again, we tried to engage the full congregation to give us their views. And that was very helpful.
What did you do with those results?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear that.
What did you do with the results of the, like, how did you use the member input as opposed to the input from your committee members?
I think it helped to form the discussion of the search committee. I will tell you that the actual process of the selection was for the search committee to who was the most engaged, and by that I mean we'd done the most interviews, we'd spent the most time with each candidate, we'd all attended every one of the programs, we'd all gotten the feedback from everybody who'd given feedback on each of the candidates. And so there was no one in our temple who had more, vector points on each candidate than the 20 members of the search committee. So in a sense, process structurally wise, we were the best ones to incorporate all of those things and make the congregation's best decision. And that, incidentally, was a really important thing for us to be able to say to the congregation when a final decision was made on the candidate, which is that it was made on the congregation's views. I'll tell you that in hindsight, the search committee had the respect of the congregation for having more insight into each candidate than any one member had.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other last question? So, Rich, let me ask as the final question here. After the decision was made and the vote or consensus was taken by the search committee and by the board and the congregation was informed of the selection of the rabbi, and then there were the people who rejected and said, this is the worst choice that anybody could have possibly made, or now that this rabbi is coming, I'm resigning and moving to Arizona. How did the search committee and the leadership of the synagogue respond to the rejections or the objections of members of the congregation to this election?
We actually did not have that response. Now, in the interest of full disclosure, we had a very controversial decision in my particular temple regarding the termination of the prior rabbi's contract and departure. And we certainly lost some members over that. But in fact, once that happened and we moved forward with this process, we had members who didn't get the candidate that they felt better about, but I'm not aware of any of them who felt that they had as much insight, never mind more insight, than the search committee had, who made the recommendation to the board. And the board, constitutionally, our board makes the hiring decision, and the board confirmed the search committee's recommendation by hiring that candidate. We had no one in our membership who felt they had more insight than the search committee. And that was really the thing that we stressed with people, is that the search committee was reflective of the input they'd given us from the very early focus groups until the very end, the feedback we'd gotten on the candidates that they had met with. And we had actually shared with them many of, not all, but many of the priorities that we had discerned out of the focus groups and discussions we'd had from them for what we were looking for in a candidate. And I think that perhaps the going back to your earlier question, Rabbi, the lack of an emotional decision by the search committee perhaps protected us from the, well, I liked, you know, this one better than the one you chose.
Terrific. So I would say that, just to rephrase what it is, the very good point that you made here is that what the search committee said very loudly was, it was not the search committee that picked the candidate, it was the congregation that picked the candidate, and the search committee was the vehicle that had solicited from the congregation the criteria for the rabbi, and the search committee was the mechanism to select the rabbi that the congregation had selected, and you were merely the actors, the ones who carried out the will of the congregation. It was not something imposed upon by the search committee.
I wish I'd put it that eloquently.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rich Michelson. You are very articulate and very clear and a great help to all of us. We are indebted to you for your perspective and for your process and for your wisdom. We thank you very much, Mr. Rich Michelson from Fair Lawn, New Jersey. This has been Elliot Schoenberg, the International Director of Placement for the Rabbinical Assembly. You have been listening to Mocha Mondays, Meditations on Career Advancement. Thank you very much for participating and for joining with us.